to plead my case. No obvious. Send me into outer space. And my fingers, I'll be jeweled with diamonds and gold. But that ain't gonna help me now.
Going down easily. Nope. Going to the championship. That is right. MFU made it past the final four to the final two. The whole world eyes on our city. That is Detroit. John. My MSU friend who turns my music down right at the good part. This is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927. You're a Spartan fan. Why do you do that to me?
Forgive me. I'm just on a championship game high.
Well, all right. We've got a program to do here, my friend. You can go. You're going to the big game tonight?
I am indeed. I have wonderful seats.
All right. So, well, you've got a few hours yet to go before the game where all eyes will be on. So let's focus on the program. You know I love my music. You've taken away my... I get so many requests for what is the name of that song, and it delights him to turn it off as soon as he possibly can for some reason. It's Trouble by Pink. And got lots going on, actually. It was a great weekend here in Detroit. And if you watched, I want to see if anyone watched the game. I'm sure you did. The Final Four. I was downtown. I didn't go to the game myself. I didn't have a ticket. The tickets were like, how'd you get a ticket? They're like seven. I heard someone paid $700. I think the finals are about $1,000 a ticket. How did you swipe one there, Mr. Krieger?
Well, you know, I had a birthday over the weekend, and it was a birthday present.
Oh, that's right. It was a birthday for John. Well, happy birthday to you, John Krieger. That's the voice on the other end when you call into the program at 866-991-9927. What's the deal on the new phone number? We're back to the old phone number. We still got the old one, huh?
It's a technological gremlins. That's what it is.
We are finalizing the transfer of the number. Anyways, it was a great... It was a great weekend here. It was Saturday. It was a great day. I'll tell you why. On so many levels, before we get into all the, we have a huge week ahead of us here. We have, tonight is the final championship NCAA game, of course. We have Jay Leno coming to town on a plane on his way right as we speak right now to Detroit, where he will do two shows, tomorrow and Wednesday night for us poor Detroiters. Because it's grim, and literally that's it. There's a big piece over the weekend paper, Sunday paper, about he's decided to come here. He's a working class guy. He's a car guy. As you know, I think he owns lots of cars. I don't know how many, but lots of them, including a lot of American cars and a lot of foreign cars. But he's coming here to cheer up people. He did this once before 20-some years ago in Pittsburgh when they had their bad days. So he's heading to town to do two free shows at the Palace here, a big sports stadium here where the Pistons play, free of charge to people who are unemployed. Now that is a stand-up kind of guy. So we're going to see if we try to get him on the show, too. So you might even have Jay Leno just to talk about Detroit. The president of the United States wrote an op-ed for our local Detroit Free Press as well over the weekend about the car situation. What else is coming up? Grover Norquist will be on our show on the Nancy Skinner program tomorrow. Oh, boy, that's going to be fun. Me and Grover. I've really had dreams about Grover and I having a chance to duke it out about tax policy. It's just great. Let's see. Fritz Henderson, new CEO of General Motors, was on Meet the Press, the ever-bruising not Meet the Press. Was not asked any questions whatsoever about fuel efficiency, just unions. So we've got a lot going on. Oh, yeah, that whole thing about North Korea, missiles being fired. Presidents in Turkey saying, we're not actually war with Islam. So we have lots going on. But before we get into that, all that stuff, let's see. I do want to talk just a little bit about the Final Four in here, because sports is not just sports. They're not. It's not just a game. I'm the daughter of a football coach, so to me, I suppose this is rings more true than to others. But I think that most people who follow sports realize that it's really sports is. And that's why it's so good to get your kids involved in sports, because it's just there's so many emotions. You learn so many lessons, and there's so many emotions. So picture this. Detroit obviously is going through some very rough times with the auto industry, given 30 days, Chrysler is, GM 60 days to pull a rabbit out of their hat, essentially, they are working with the auto task force, of course, nationally, to try and do something. But 12% unemployment is, I checked the latest numbers here, it's over 12%. So everyone's been bummed out with the latest numbers. What was that, Thursday, Friday that came out, 8.5%? Well, we've been at 12% for a long time. So, and in fact, USA Today, the front page when I pulled that up on my website, said some local municipalities are printing their own money. Because we're having such hard times that people are printing their own money. So I look and I'm looking at the currency in the picture. It's Detroit. It's the logo of Detroit. I'm like, yeah, okay, that figures. So, so you got this whole backdrop to hosting the Final Four, which is a big deal. Hosting the Final Four is a big deal. We had the Super Bowl a couple years back, and it was great. And so I was downtown and with some friends and family. And I'll tell you, I'm a Wolverine. So normally it's a huge rivalry between Michigan and Michigan State, you know, home state rivalry. But we were all Spartans on Saturday. Everyone was in green, and the city, there was a sense of pride that is hard for me to even describe to you. That the team, well, first of all, got to that point. We're hosting it at the fabulous Ford Field where the Detroit Lions play. It's a gorgeous field built, 6 years ago or something like that. But the city looked great. People were so nice to each other. Here's what's weird. Why does this happen? I mean, people just talking to each, walking down the street, like doing high fives, just complimenting each other, friendly as all can be. There was a sense, and I've been to a lot of sporting events and a lot of championships and a lot of everything. This was beyond that. And, you know, note to self, it was pretty cool because I think there was this underlying setting in people's minds of, hey, look at, you know what? There's pride here. There is pride, and we are going to make it. There was that steely determination in people. So you got that going on in the backdrop, and then the game itself against Connecticut, UConn, turned out to be a fabulous game. Yes, John, he's doing a high five. He's doing a jig in there. It was a good game, close game, down to the wire, but the Spartans pulled it out and advanced to the championship. And I can't tell you, it's been very rare that I've seen, been able to experience that kind of euphoria. That's the, actually the headline is MS Euphoria, Mitch Albom of Tuesdays with Maury, also a Detroiter. Very proud of what went on there. Obviously great article. So now we advance. Tonight is the North Carolina Tar Heels. It's a rematch for the big championship in Detroit. Where all eyes are on the city. Jay Leno's headed here. It was just very, I can't, if you want to weigh in, if you've ever felt this way, there was more than a game going on. Let me just say that. There was more than a game going on. And I think in adversity in general, this may be happening in other cities who are hard struck. You might have felt it. In some cases, people act out, as in that terrible shooting and killing. There was another one in Pittsburgh. But in some cases, like any calamity, people pull together. And there was a sense of common spirit. I don't know. I'm like, you know, I don't like MSU. I'm a Wolverine. But I was so caught up in it because it was so much bigger than the game. It was about that comeback spirit that we are going to survive this thing together. That was just awesome. It was a great feeling. So tonight will be a great game. All right. A little gay marriage, shall we? I've got gay marriage and Elliot Spitzer coming up. I know it's a weird combination. 866-991-9927. Hang in there, and you'll get the dots connected for ya right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. It is the Nancy Skinner Show on a Monday, and I am Nancy Skinner. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. Have we checked that, John, to make sure? For sure? Yes, okay. So 866-991-9927. All right, anyways, before I get into it, we are going to talk a little bit about the ruling over the gay marriage in Iowa, and actually upholding or striking down a ban against it in Iowa was what the ruling concerned. But before we get into wanting to get married, how about being married and being Elliot Spitzer and really screwing up what could have been, well, a stellar career, Elliot Spitzer. So this just sort of struck me because I was listening to this interview with Elliot Spitzer, former governor of New York, obviously, who had to resign upon revelation that he was paying a very, very high price for a young prostitute. But here's the thing. He got out, and he's trying to make his comeback, I guess, I suppose. But it's to talk about the economy and his concern that the bailouts aren't the right course of action for both the financials and for the autos. So, of course, this is going to come into my crosshairs, right? So let's just, here he is, why he was so compelled to come out and speak.
With the U.S. economy in turmoil, the man once known as the Sheriff of Wall Street is back. Governor Spitzer, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Matt. Thank you.
I want to talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the room in a second, but first I'd like to talk about your decision to step forward. Obviously, the economy is in trouble. So much attention being paid to Wall Street. I know you feel that's a very strong element on your resume, mm-hmm. but you also know that by stepping out and talking about that subject, the subject of your own scandal is going to come up. How difficult a decision was it?
Well, it's very difficult. I've tried to apologize to, of course, my family, to colleagues, to the state for what I did, for which there are no excuses possible. But I've also been asked my views about important issues because I had worked for many years trying to address some of the issues that unfortunately have been dragging down our economy and shaking the very foundations of our economy.
So the decision to be here this morning, something you went over with your wife, Silda, and your daughters?
Absolutely.
They had a say in this?
This is something that has caused excruciating pain to Silda, to my daughters, something that I carry with me every day because of the pain to them. And so I've tried to balance the obligation to try to speak if asked, but also the pain to my family, which has been enormous.
So apparently there's some enormous demand for him, Elliot Spitzer, to come out and to speak. So he's had to balance that. It might end up hurting his wife, Silda, whom I have met, actually, when I worked for the governor of Michigan and was chief of staff to her husband, Dan Mulhern, was the head of all the spouses. They have an organization, so the National Governors Association Spouses Group, and he chaired it. So I did meet Silda, lovely, lovely lady. So he had to balance that with our dire need to see what Elliot Spitzer has to say about the financial situation. So he just felt it was more important that we all heard what he said than the pain he caused to his family. So he called his mistakes egregious, okay? Get that? Egregious mistakes.
People look at you and they say, here was the highest elected official in the state of New York. But there's more. Here is a guy who had almost an Elliot Ness type reputation. He went after abuses of power. He went after the high and mighty. How could he have allowed himself to be involved in a prostitution scandal?
I, Matt, like most of us, I suppose, I won't speak for anybody else, have had flaws and have tried to think about it deeply, address it. As I say, there are no excuses. I have tried to address these gremlins and confront them. What I did was an egregious violation of trust to my family, to colleagues, to the state, and I've paid a price, and appropriately so.
You were not prosecuted for your actions, and as a result, we don't know the extent of your actions. I just wonder if you could give me some ballpark, some estimation of how long...
How many times did you do it? Matt Lauer asked. We want details. All right, when we come back, you think he'd have the same sort of empathy for the autos and people? Wait to hear his answer on the bailouts. He wants a bailout for his marriage. Coming back on the Nancy Skinner Show. All right, so Elliot Spitzer kissed a girl, and lots of girls in Iowa are going to kiss girls. Okay, how's that then? This is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. Before I talk about that ruling by the Supreme Court in Iowa, I have to make this point with Spitzer on the Today Show, because it really bothered me. Not that he can't redeem himself because of his little predilection toward prostitutes. Everybody makes mistakes and egregious ones, and he's coming out and saying there was no excuses. Fine, we get this. But listen to this. When he was asked about the financials situation and the automakers, something struck me as discordant.
It's become very popular to bash anyone connected with Wall Street. Let me go to AIG for a second. Here, there was so much public outrage in the last several weeks over these bonuses that were handed out to some employees after the bailout money had been given to AIG. But the fact of the matter is, many of those employees had that money coming to them, and the vast majority of the people who got the bonuses had nothing to do with the financial collapse and the dealings of AIG that brought the problem on. Was it unfair, the criticism from the public and the government?
The compensation system on Wall Street spiraled totally out of control, just as the compensation system throughout corporate America spiraled out of control. CEOs were making 500 times the average worker. It used to be 40 times. It was wrong. So it was the lightning rod for our anger about that entire system. The larger issue, though, was that the AIG money was sent through to what are called the counterparties, $12.9 billion with a B, just to Goldman Sachs. Why? Those are the issues that have to be asked.
All right. Okay. So I think there's a little bit of hypocrisy going on.
Something
here
to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, you said that the regulations were there, but the will to regulate was not there. So now that we've had that the economy is story number 1, 2, and 3 in this country right now, and there's been so much public outrage, is the will to regulate there now?
I hope the will is there because the mistakes of the past were so egregious. But to a certain extent,
egregious,
all of the focus on re-regulating, which is necessary, is masking over the much tougher issue, which is how do we redesign a financial services sector so that it does what it's supposed to do instead of merely taking enormous sums out, giving them to the wrong people. This was an enormous extraction of wealth by people who manipulated money back and forth but did not create anything for the economy. And the toughest issue, Matt, going forward is where will we see value creation in our economy? Where will we create the goods, the products to sell to create the jobs and balance our balance of payment?
Did you get that? Where will we create? Who's going to make stuff? Who's going to make stuff? Goods like, say, cars, Governor Spitzer, that you just in your previous quote said you didn't think should be bailed out. All right, I'm going to get back to that. It was just it was the 800-pound gorilla that caught my eye vis-a-vis the sex part of it. But then when I actually listened to what he had to say, which was that we shouldn't bail out. His mistakes were egregious, and the mistakes of the automakers were egregious. He should get some sort of
contract in A is valid in B, and everyone has the right to this. that I think it'll be now within my lifetime that we see marriage across the country. This battle is over. The war is over. There may be some skirmishes here and there, but as we see young people that you referenced, young people today want equality. A majority of young evangelical kids today believe in marriage equality. So from that perspective,
okay, well, then, given that in the spirit of the open forumness of the Nancy Skinner Show, Mike Rogers, you hold on. After the debate, I'm going to, or the break here, I'm going to debate you on that point. Not that I don't agree with you. I'm just going to give you what some might say about why you're wrong. How's that? You'll hang on. You join in. What do you think? That's really the question that they're opposing in the CBS News thing. Is this the tipping point? Because it's the heartland. It's Iowa, folks. Iowa. The Supreme Court in Iowa, unanimous decision upholding gay marriage written by a Republican justice. So is Mike Rogers right? Game over? Done? It will be the land of the law? Is it going to be like interracial marriage, slavery, the right from the Iowa was the first state to give women the right to own property? Who knew? 866-991-9927 or look at Prop 8. That's the other side. Look at what they did there. They went, and because of it, they banned it constitutionally. They went through the courts. I don't know. We shall see. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Here we go. It is Nancy Skinner Show. Nancy Skinner. On the eve of the NCAA championships in my hometown, I'm getting lots of email about, stop bragging about Detroit. Hey, something to be proud of here. We're talking gay marriage. Even as Iowa, the state Supreme Court, ruled on Friday. A fantastic blogger with.
Who is, you know, certainly not, as you said, not California, not Massachusetts, not New York, New Jersey, it's Iowa. And because of that, and I think we'll see more and more focus on it, because as you say, Iowa, so goes the nation, that this is something that's really going to be a sea change in this whole discussion and why it's so different.
So Vermont, in other words, they can't be out Iowa or something like that, because they're Vermont, they're,
well,
East Coasters. They're,
it's,
you know,
happening.
They're right. They're,
get over it. That is what I want to tell them, and that's what they can go back with now and say, you know, look, in Iowa, that kind of thing.
Now, the grievous harm that will be caused to families as a result of gay marriage, let's focus on that, because I keep trying to, I try and figure this out from people who really are opposed, and I don't, you know, you, Mike, what I like about you is that you, in this whole issue, you are able to hear both sides of this, and you know that there's a visceral dislike from some people. They have an uncomfort level about it. Then there are just purely homophobics, you know, really those people that are the
right.
Most outspoken that are probably gay, right? And then there's just like a lot of people in the middle of this who aren't gay. And just don't, you know, aren't feeling the whole grievous harm argument. Like, how does that really affect me? Because that's always been my case when I try to talk to those folks. Like, how, when you say it's going to harm families, like, how?
Right.
Do you think people are going to all of a sudden try it or turn gay? Because somehow
exactly.
There's a institution, that, you know, there's a change in the law or the institution. I don't know. It seems like a stretch.
It is, the arguments against equality are all based in one thing and one thing alone, and that's religion. And the Constitution makes very clear that there is the separation of church and state. So basically, it's very simple. With folks who are all about it, then if we really want to have separation of church and state, and they want to marry people only of opposite gender, that's fine. Then the state, if there's a conflict, needs to get out of the marrying business. So the state could issue contracts, let's call them civil unions, mm-hmm. and then churches and houses of worship, whichever their decision is at each house of worship or church or synagogue, that they can decide what they want to issue as a marriage. Nobody here is saying that every church will be forced to marry.
No. And that's often confused, and I've
right.
always said that. You can't, the First Amendment, obviously separation of church and state, gives churches that right to decide. I mean, that's a free choice institution. But the law does not, right?
Well, correct. And when it comes to codifying the discrepancy in law, it's clearly a case of equal protection. And one of the arguments that's been used,
Mike. You know what? I'm plumb out of time here.
Okay.
I didn't realize I was up against my
Next
clock
time.
So much. Next time, this shall continue. Mike Rogers, thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you.
Historic rulings. Iowa Supreme Court upholding gay marriage. couple last thoughts on that before we move along here. Nancy Skinner, show. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. 866-991-9927. I like the wisdom of children. This was sent to me. I normally don't like spam email or, you know, forwarded email, but this one's pretty funny. How do you decide who to marry? And these are all 10-year-olds. Alan says, age 10, you've got to find someone who likes the same stuff. Like if you like sports, she should like it that you like sports, and she should keep the chips and dip coming. How about this? No person really decides before they grow up who they're going to marry. God decides it all the way before, and you get to find out later who you're stuck with. Let's see. How can a stranger tell if two people are married? You might have to guess based on whether they seem to be yelling at the same kids. Derek, age 8. let me see. My favorite of all of them is it better to be single or married? No, I have two favorites. It's better for girls to be single, but not for boys. Boys need someone to clean up after them. It's in Anita, age 11. My favorite is, how would you make a marriage work? This is Ricky, age 10. Tell your wife that she looks pretty even when she looks like a dump truck. So, the Iowa Supreme Court says the right to be miserable shall not be abridged. You know when I think that this gets ridiculous, that there are all these groups that spend so much time trying to, they've pledged to vow to overturn it and have a constitutional amendment. They won't even begin to consider it till 2012, given the court system there. But you know what? To me, I always try and put things in context here. This was on page 32A of the Detroit Free Press. 32, page 32A. Okay? Headline about the NCAA, everything else going on. Most Arctic ice could be gone in just 30 years. New analysis of changing conditions based on new computer models says that conditions that had been forecast to happen by the end of the century could occur much sooner. That within 30 years, almost all sea ice could be gone. This is what's shocking, folks, before we move on here. Due to the record loss, this is a quote out of the report, due to the record loss of sea ice, the 2005 to 2008 autumn central Arctic surface air temperatures were greater than 5 degrees Celsius, that's 9 degrees Fahrenheit, above what would be expected, this new study finds. 9 degrees higher than we expected it to be, that amount of temperature increase had been expected by the year 2070. Let me just translate that for you in layman's terms as someone who studied this. We are so screwed that it doesn't really matter who's marrying who at this point. If we're 9 degrees off on these estimates and that what's supposed to happen by 2070 in terms of the melting of all the Arctic ice is actually happening now, no one's going to care or want to waste an ounce of their precious time stopping someone from marrying someone else, okay? Because they're going to have bigger problems on their hands. That's when I know we've turned the corner, when we have bigger problems on our hands than the old culture wars, which seem to be were sort of an extravagance, something to argue about, of no real import to anybody. Now, so speaking of, that's a terrible segue of no real import, because one person who's had a real import and impact on the national discussion over many years on many issues is Joe Madison, a radio talk show host who is named the Black Eagle, also on Sirius and XM, and a frequent contributor to all those cable shows and to the discussion, our national discussion. Joe Madison is, he's really digging a new proposal out there to save our economy, saveoureconomy.com, that would essentially give a year, 1 year mortgage holiday to everybody. Yes, folks, everybody. Doesn't matter if you own, well, if you don't own, you're a renter, you get a certain benefit. But everybody, it doesn't matter if you're upside down, if you're close to upside down. It's a one-year mortgage, and that's principal and interest payments for an entire year. So I had to have Joe come on the show and talk about this one as a plan. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You explained it almost perfectly. That's the cornerstone of it. And, of course, if all the water is heading our way because of ice melt, you won't have to worry about that either.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's all relative.
Get a boat, but...
Hey, Joe, before we jump into this and the economy and what you're hearing, I just see here that, because I know you're on in Washington, D.C., you're right in the central of the nerve.
Yeah, that's where we broadcast from, right?
Right,
yeah.
But you started, it says, in Detroit at the legendary WXYZ-AM.
I actually started on weekends at WXYZ.
The XYZ, a legendary talk station right here in my hometown of Detroit.
Right. And then they sold it, and it became WXYT, but I was there for, I don't know how many years, and ran the NACP. I was the executive director of the Detroit NAACP.
Really?
Yeah, for several years, and ran for city council there.
You lived in the city?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I did not know that. I mean, I've known you and
I have three children that were born in Detroit, and some of them, matter of fact, a person that I ran against the city council was the father of your mayor, who's trying to seek re-election, Kenneth Cockrell. And at the time, Kenneth Cockrell was attorney, and he and I ran for city council. I just barely lost. Detroit's the only city I know where you can get over 100,000 votes and not win an office. In this town, Washington, the mayor got elected with probably 25,000 votes.
Yeah, we have a very interesting situation. We have some pretty famous folks on our council. Now we have Martha Reeves from Martha Reeves and the Vandellas.
I've known Martha for a long, long time. I've known Dave Bing.
Dave Bing's also running for mayor, as you know.
Sure.
Against Ken Cockrell.
Right. I know them all. They know me.
You got Monica Conyers, who's John Conyers, Congressman Conyers' wife.
He's on my show tomorrow.
Give him my regards. Good friend.
Yeah.
All right, so
yeah.
we've done our – and, of course, we'll end this Detroit little insular discussion. Uh-huh. People get mad at me for bringing it up so much.
No, that's okay. Detroit's home always will be.
But what do you think? NCAA, man, Sparty's in the championship.
Sent the White House an email this morning, and I've got a wager with President Obama have to go against him on this one, and I'm
sort of, tell me he's...
this time I'm like Rush Limbaugh. I want you to fail in your selection of who's going to win the NCAA. So I've got a wager. If North Carolina wins, then I'll invite him to my house for dinner. And if the Spartans win, keep my fingers crossed, then he has to invite me to his house.
He's weighing in for the Tar Heels? You did?
I am for the Spartans all the way. Right. I'm going to be sitting there watching and keeping my fingers crossed. But it's good for Detroit. That's the main thing. God, is it good for that.
Well, it is. I was talking when I began the program, Joe, about I was downtown Saturday, and you wouldn't believe the spirit. Because we're in such hard straits right now, and I'm a Wolverine, I'm with U of M, so, but that didn't matter. You know, we're all Spartans on a day like this.
That's absolutely right. I mean, I had Sandy Levin on today, and we were talking about, I was telling him about the concern for outsourcing. I remember you could go to Detroit, get a job in one of those auto factories, make enough money to buy one of those homes with a front yard and a backyard and a porch and send your kids to college, you know, and support the symphony or the art museum or whatever. And then, you know, jobs end up, part jobs, auto jobs end up being outsourced to who knows where. Like IBM with their, you know, and these people get tax breaks. It makes no sense.
Right.
IBM turns around, is going to lay off people. And in the same day they announce they're laying off people, they announce they're outsourcing jobs to India.
Oh, you're going to love this one, Joe, when we come back. When I tell you who's actually giving the shaft to Chrysler, I don't know if you've heard this story yet. Mm. But you're going to want to, because you're going to want to talk about it on your show, too.
Oh, well, let me hear it.
All right, Joe Madison, hang with me, will you, buddy? All right,
sure.
great. You bet. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, he calls himself Sirius XM, but he's out of Washington, D.C., as you can tell. And I didn't know he was a Detroiter, so sorry about that, Charles. It comes up a lot. We are the center of the universe on a couple of issues once in a while, good and bad. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. We're going to talk about Save Our Economy, this idea of a one-year mortgage holiday for everyone. What do you think of that one? Weigh in with Joe Madison and Nancy Skinner on The Nancy Skinner Show. Monday, a big important Monday, happens to be the NCAA Championship Monday, and so for me that's a big deal, coming out of Detroit, the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927, and I know my friend Joe Madison, radio talk show host and political activist throughout his career, is also going to be watching the game tonight, so happy to have Joe with me on this day. But Joe, I wanted to get to your very... supportive of Save Our Economy. Now, this is I've been covering the details, obviously, of this global economic meltdown as closely as anyone. I'm a finance U of M person, so to me, I've been watching it happen for a long time, sort of knowing that the perfect storm was brewing. But why is it that you and I've been very supportive of the stimulus plan in general? I take a very Keynesian approach to this whole thing. This is the only way in a downward deflationary spiral that you can affect it. Is the government is the only entity with the leverage to do it. But so when I read this SaveOurEconomy.com and this proposal to have a moratorium, is it a way to try to get a stimulus without the government? Is that the whole focus of this?
It's a partnership. Because the government would, in fact, Congress would have to agree or declare a national mortgage holiday for 1 year. Now, we're talking probably, with a conservative guess, it would probably put about $100 billion back into the economy. Now that's far more than what they, and I'm talking monthly, $100 billion monthly, because there's about $12 trillion of total mortgage real estate debt in the United States. So here's the plan. You have to pay your mortgage. It's just a 1 year holiday. So for 12 months, everyone who has real estate, commerce, or farm mortgage loan would have a 12-month holiday. So if you've got a 25-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage, you just tack it on the back. Now, what happens to the banks? The banks raise a whole lot of hell about it. No, you give the banks up to 6% interest payment so that they get part of theirs. Now, also part of it would be number two. You would have to continue home refinancing and loan modification, which is what they're doing now. The government would purchase existing mortgages, mortgage-backed securities. You would also have to adopt reasonable reforms and regulations. And the government would also have to invest, as they are now, in public works programs to put people to work. Now, bottom line is this. Imagine if you did not have to pay your mortgage for 1 year. The reality is that would stimulate the economy. There would be no ifs, ands, buts about it.
Well,
better than what they're doing now by giving this money and bailing out Wall Street and the AIGs and banks, as you well know, who sat on this money and didn't lend it but used it to balance their.
But how does this solve? I see some forbearance that is essentially a shot in the arm of liquidity to the consumers, which I think, one, you've got one problem of it being much more regressive, but also it doesn't solve the problem, Joe, in my view, of the, you know, the three-legged stool you got there. You're solving one leg, which is the housing values, maybe, because I think it would disrupt the natural signals of that market, but also the credit, the fact that the credit has stalled at banks, that credit, I mean, you know, that's what we're trying to do with this whole toxic asset buyout plan, is to get that bad debt off of the books so that banks start lending again to businesses. How does this plan deal with that?
Well, that's where number three comes in. Again, it's an 8-part plan, but number three in the plan, you can go to saveoureconomy.org. The government would purchase the existing mortgage-backed securities. Now, that would help to stabilize
situation. We're coming up to 20 seconds here, Joe Madison, which you understand in radio time means out of time. So we're going to go to saveoureconomy.com, and we'll talk about it, take some calls. We were glad you brought it to our attention. And go Spartans. Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks.
You bet. All right, buddy. Take care. SaveOurEconomy.com. What do you think of that, guys? A one-year holiday on your mortgage. Would that solve the problem? It's the Nancy Skinner Show. Here we go, 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. Did you watch Meet the Press? We met the new chairman and the new, I guess, technically CEO of General Motors. Kind of contentious. I think David Gregory was trying to stake out some new ground there and make good on some of the recent criticism. He hasn't been as tough as Tim Russert used to be. And so I just thought I'd go through a little bit of this because it's interesting that the questions were all about the unions, all about the involvement with the Obama administration. I just haven't seen a banker on Meet the Press. I haven't seen Ed Lydia. I haven't seen any of those guys get the kind of grilling that the auto industry is getting. Here's David Gregory on the whole Rick Wagner decision.
In just the last 4 years, the value of the stock has plunged 95%. It was $42 a share a year and a half ago. It's $2.10 as it closed on Friday. Do you think the firing of Rick Wagner was the right decision?
David, Rick was my friend, mentor. I worked for him for the better part of my career. But with Rick, it was always about the company, not about him. And he was asked to step aside, and he did. And we need to look forward.
Well, but part of looking forward is trying to take account for what's gone on up till now and mistakes that have been made, decisions that have been made that the White House says were not reflective of the idea of really taking account for mistakes that have been made. Can you point to some areas where you think the company has really faltered?
Well, it has been a difficult, you mentioned it, it has been a certainly challenging last several years. We've had challenges in a number of places around the globe, whether it's here in our home market in the United States or in Europe. And in many ways, we're not the only ones that have had those problems, but I really don't focus on that. We just need to take the mistakes we've made, learn from them, not get overly invested in them, and go forward and learn from them.
As a prominent member of the business community, I wonder if you agree with the governor of Michigan, who thinks there's a double standard when it comes to this financial crisis, that the government will go in and fire Rick Wagner, but they don't deal with some of the CEOs in the banking industry at the top banks where there have been such mistakes made. Do you think it's a double standard?
David, I don't really think about what happens in other industries. It's not, for me to say, it's not a worry of mine. Our worry is how do we get General Motors going forward, and that's where we're going to spend 100% of our time.
Now, that was a very positive, upbeat answer to that question, but you know that Fritz Henderson wanted to say, hell yeah, David, of course, there's a double standard going on here. Are you kidding me? Where are all these guys? Where are, you know, here's the story. We're going to get someone on to talk a bit about this. What we're finding out is that one of the people who are the bankers, the bondholders, you know, I told you they've been recalcitrant in cutting a deal with the auto industry, with Chrysler. Guess who it is? Guess who is the holdout that is refusing to go along with the game? That would be a one J.P. Morgan Chase. Yep, J.P. Morgan Chase. The bankers are the ones who are causing the everyone. The unions gave in all their concessions. It's the bankers. It's the banks who are getting the money and the counter party payments from AIG and everything else that are causing the problems. So, you know, I know that Fritz Henderson was trying to be Mr. Upbeat. We're just worried about what we're doing. Something tells me, though, I don't know, I'll put this on. You think these guys should call it like they see it and say, yeah, I actually do, David, think there's a major double standard here. Because there has been all the way along. We're manufacturers. We've made some mistakes. We've admitted those mistakes a time and time again. We've been trying to get on the right track for years. We finally are on the right track. We're taking loans, not grants, interest-bearing loans. Hell yeah. We've never had, where's the viability plan that was in the Free Press this week? Where is the requirement for a viability plan for the banks? Has anyone ever asked them for a plan? No, has not. All right, so then he also questioned whether, you know, this is essentially a takeover by the government.
The government role in effectively running GM has been criticized here in Washington. Real questions about whether the government ought to be doing this. Republican from Tennessee, Senator Bob Corker, spoke out about it this week. This is what he said. I'd like to have you react to it. They have opened Pandora's box. The U.S. government has decided they know better than the private company. There is no question that this country is moving down a very different and foreign path. We have crossed this threshold. We own this company, and we are telling it what to do. Here's an image from Business Week in its current magazine. There you are in the front seat and a visual backseat driver, President Obama, telling you exactly which way to go. The president said that the administration doesn't want to run GM. But is that right? Doesn't, in fact, the government run GM?
No, David. I think the administration and the task force has been very clear. They don't wish to run General Motors. They expect us to get our job done. But the day we took money from the taxpayer was one of the most difficult days, certainly my career and of the history of General Motors. We need to respect the fact that we need to look after the taxpayer. We need to justify to the consumer and the taxpayer that we're going to succeed going forward. And one of the happiest days of my future career is going to be the day we pay the loans back.
Okay, so that's funny that it was Tennessee Senator Bob Corker saying that we're going down a foreign path here and being the loudest in the criticism of involvement, because he's the senator from Nissan in Tennessee. And these guys have given, I forget, it's about $225,000 per capita, the subsidy to Nissan and these foreign automakers in the southern states to get those jobs there. What is the difference, I would ask you, other than the relative amounts? What is the difference between giving a subsidy on that level to attract that company? Those are taxpayer dollars. To attract that company at the outrageous levels that they did, that every state did, for whatever company, but in this case, it's the auto industry. So there's hypocrisy here. And now this senator, Bob Corker, Shelby, these two are the most vocal of the opponents to helping the auto industry through this period. And they've given the largest amount of money to Japanese companies to come locate in their state. What's the difference? He's saying this is scary and foreign, and that the government is essentially owning it. Well, why was that not the case when you gave them money to come relocate? What is the substantive difference, really, between giving that money to come relocate into your state and money to get through a tight credit situation and to retool? Give me some. Is there some delineating line that says it's okay to give away billions in subsidies to attract those businesses, but not okay to keep those businesses alive? Because, you know, that's the question I would have asked if I were David Gregory. That's a question Tim Russert would have asked. Okay, did you, you know, you've given all this money to these Japanese companies for all these years, and it's something like $220,000 per capita in these, relatively poor southern states for them to be subsidizing the jobs to this tune. And then these guys are the most vocal when it comes to their opposition to helping the heart of manufacturing, which affects big industrial states like Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana, and many, many more. I mean, so that question wasn't asked, I guarantee you that. He was more focused on should the government be involved in this at all, which, you know, I just haven't heard the same level of questioning as it relates to the banks and the bank bailouts. He starkly said, do you report to Obama?
But the reality is that the administration has said who should run the company and who shouldn't. The administration is reconstituting the board of directors. You report to the Obama White House, do you not?
David, I report to Ken Kressa, the interim chairman of the board of directors, but I also have direct line into the president's task force. In fact, I have several masters. But in the end, it's about getting the company in the right direction, and that's what I'm planning to do.
So he's trying to avoid that, you know, some discussion, because it's not direct ownership. They're not. The auto task force has come into this and said, here's the deal, what we need. And the president was very clear. He wrote an op-ed in the was it published in the Detroit Free Press today, I mentioned earlier, to people from states, auto states, saying, look, we need an auto industry. We need a vibrant auto industry. And I have no intention of letting them fail. So here's the benchmarks we need you to achieve. Here's the turnaround. They haven't been able to do it. They could have done it in a regular environment where you didn't have credit markets frozen up. Yes, they could have. That doesn't exist. That went by the wayside with the global meltdown. So now they are forced to do it in a different environment. You have a challenge. You had a great challenge to begin with, and now you're going to have to do it in a different environment. And this guy, I like him. I mean, he's basically got a positive attitude.
Critics of the industry and of General Motors in particular say the culture at GM is simply too inbred. How can an insider like yourself be relied upon to make transformational change?
Well, I do come to the job with 25 years of experience in the company, And having run our businesses just about everywhere around the globe, I've seen a lot of things happen in the automotive industry. I've seen good times, I've seen bad times, and we've adjusted. I think in the end, we have to prove it, and you just watch us. We'll get this job done.
Here it is. A message from the president, I guess, just to the people of Michigan. The headline in the op-ed is, Obama, we cannot let auto industry vanish, by President Barack Obama. He says, one of the challenges we have confronted since the beginning of this administration is what to do about the state of our struggling auto industry. He's coming back, is it tomorrow, I believe, he's coming back from Europe, and this will be on his doorstep. And I'm sure he'll be thinking about it when he watches a rerun of the NCAA championship, because I don't think he'll be doing it live over there across the pond. He goes on to say that we simply cannot let our auto industry vanish. This industry is an emblem of America. It is what helped build the middle class and sustained it throughout the 20th century. It's a source of deep pride for generations of Americans. But we cannot make the survival of our auto industry dependent on the unending flow of tax dollars. Therein lies the rub, my friends. He's made a commitment to the survival of the industry. And so in order to affect its continuation, they have to get involved. We all have to get involved. Our dollars are on the line. That's why they've taken such a strong role with the auto task force. But it does beg the question, why not with the financials? I mean, where is that level of involvement? I suppose they're seeking this new authority to regulate non-bank institutions. So they'll have some regulatory authority to prevent a future collapse. Do you see what I'm saying? That's different than really getting in there and saying, okay, credit default swaps, those things, yeah, we're going to, that's, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to, oh, by the way, Patrick Kennedy, Congressman Patrick Kennedy, is considering, if he hasn't already done this, a bill to repeal Graham Leach Wiley, which, if you're all new to all this meltdown talk, was the reason we got where we got in a lot of ways, a lot of respects. It was the law, that Depression era law, that we figured out what went wrong during the Depression, fixed it, and then unfixed it with Graham Leach Bliley. Now we're going to have to fix what we unfixed because we fixed it during the Depression. Do you get me? Thank God. So this is what we're going to have to do with the auto industry and the financial industry, I think, is figure out what went wrong and how to fix it. Because we can't just not sell things. Pretty easy. And we appreciate the message from the President of the United States. Not so much David Gregory. I don't know about David Gregory. He didn't even talk about technology, fuel efficiency. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Program. Shake my paranoia. Shake my paranoia. I'm moving, moving, dancing like Madonna. If I don't ask you certain questions, it is the Nancy Skinner Show. Just indulge me, if you will. 866-991-9927. Talking about Fritz Henderson's appearance on Meet the Press with David Gregory this past Sunday. And even Media Matters, so I'm not alone, okay, pointed this out, that NBC's David Gregory repeatedly asked GM CEO about cutting union benefits and jobs, but not about making fuel-efficient cars. That he did not ask a single question about creating fuel-efficient or environmentally friendly cars. He asked several times about cutting union benefits or jobs, but nothing about the technology. Let's see. Do I have that one? Let's see about the legacy costs. Well, I don't know if I have the cut or not. Here it is. I'll read it for you. The legacy costs, meaning all of the costs associated with union employees, part of the UAW, is just a huge issue for General Motors. The government report indicates that in order to pay those retired auto workers, GM has to produce an extra 900,000 cars every year. What is the message to the union now? Doesn't it have to be those days are over? So let me get this straight. I mean, do you understand the import of that question? What about all those retirees, the legacy costs? Legacy costs means someone worked for 30 years, they have a pension and health care, now they're retired. And is David Gregory really saying those days are over? Does that mean that no one should have pensions or health care, that somehow people who have those benefits should lose them? I guess I'm not even clear what he's asking here. That if you're already retired, because some people are suggesting that. I went nuts a little bit earlier about the Elliot Spitzer interview on NBC's Today Show today, because he said the same thing. He said that the UAW, that the retired workers, that they were just too lavish of benefits. If people are retired, there's nothing you're not going to get a 75-year-old person to what? Go to retrain or deal with some other issue? I mean, they've already given concession after concession. And as it turns out, it is the bondholders. It was the Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, in the case of Chrysler, to be very specific, that has been holding out. So, again, double standard? Yeah, I'll say it. Fritz Henderson won't say it. I'll say it. 866-991-9927. Oh, here's an important question.
Your predecessor, Rick Wagner, agreed to work for a dollar, given the taxpayers were putting so much money into General Motors. You didn't make that agreement. You're going to be working for considerably more than that. Why?
David, at the beginning of this year, as part of the series of sacrifices, my salary was cut 30%, and basically it stayed where it is. My salary today is the same it was 2 weeks ago. We've asked all of the parties of General Motors, including myself and others, to make sacrifices, and it's going to stay that way.
But how much will you make?
My salary is $1.3 million.
Well, $1.3 million. Well, you know what? For a CEO of the largest manufacturing company in America, that seems a little reasonable to me. I mean, that doesn't seem like obsessive, but... I wonder what the benefits were if you'd added them up to the workers. Certainly, the way they make the sound, that was what Spitzer really got me upset about, is that he questioned whether we should even be those bonus payments to the AIG, whether those people earned that money, it should have been theirs. And it's like, wait a minute, okay, if you invented credit default swaps and you got a retention bonus, you should keep it even if you leave or don't leave. Even though it's make-believe kind of money. But if you work for 30 years on the assembly line, you should just keep giving more and more and more and more. That's kind of the double standard that I see. Maybe I have home team blindness. Maybe not. Time will tell. All right. Enough of that. 866-991-9927, I promise, for now, for today, on the Nancy Skinner Show. So, you just get right back up, dust yourself off. and you keep going. When you hit a bump in the road or the economy or any other situation, survival situation, is the Nancy Skinner Show. Before I talk about survival here, how about this one real quickly? I love this story. Dog survives 4 months on an island. The owners of a dog who fell aboard while they were sailing in rough waters off Australia thought that she was gone forever, but the dog, Sophie Tucker, was reunited after surviving alone on an island 4 months. Fell over, they thought this cattle dog had drowned, but she swam 5 nautical miles and made it to an uninhabited island where she lived by hunting baby goats until she was captured by rangers and reunited with her family for 5 months. A domesticated dog. So anyone can survive anything. How's that? Just a good news story of the day. The reason I bring that up is because we've had a lot of bad news stories today. I'm seeing an alternative reality develop here. We had the whole horrific story on Friday in Binghamton, New York. And then over the weekend, in Pittsburgh, three officers were gunned down by an insane madman saying that he thought Obama was going to take his gun rights away. He was infringing his rights and that they were going to take the guns and whatnot. And that was part of a terrible situation in Pittsburgh. So a lot of bad news. I'm looking at the news and I'm looking at two completely different realities out there. 866-991-9927. That's the number my producer was telling me to put that the new number out. Here's what I'm looking at. He goes overseas by most standards, just an overwhelming success at the G20. They, even though they're coming from different sides of this equation, they find a deal to have some global stimulus as well as a regulatory framework for the whole world. 20 nations get together in 2 days and come together to solve the global economic meltdown, or at least take those tentative steps. He's received so well in the eyes of the rest of the world. There are jubilant crowds. He has town halls, several of them, in which he takes people to task, even saying that there's an anti-American attitude sometimes, that we're not always right, and we need to be more humble. We need to listen more. But there is, in his words, there is in Europe an anti-Americanism that is at once casual but can also be insidious. Instead of recognizing the good that America so often does in the world, there have been times where Europeans chose to blame America for much of what's bad. He said that happens on both sides of the Atlantic. These attitudes have become all too common. They're not wise. They do not represent the truth. They threaten to widen the divide across the Atlantic and leave us both more isolated. They fail to acknowledge the fundamental truth that America cannot confront the challenges of this century alone, but that Europe cannot confront them without America. It was a very even-handed discussion. Now, Sean Hannity gets on his show and omits that part. Oh, yeah, let's listen to this little clip of Sean on his show, my friend, my counterpart, Sean Hannity, with half the story.
Tonight. There have been times where America's shown arrogance, been dismissive, even derisive.
Obama apologizing for the arrogance of America.
America is arrogant. That's what Mr. Obama said today, doing his best Dixie Chicks impression while his New World Order tour traveled across Europe. And that is our headline this Friday night, day number 74 of a country I am proud of, Obama attacks America. Now, speaking to an audience in France, this is what the president said this very morning.
In America, there's a failure to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. Instead of celebrating your dynamic union and seeking to partner with you to meet common challenges, there have been times where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive.
And the liberal tradition of blame America first, well, that's still alive. But you'll really be surprised from a man who sat in Reverend Wright's church.
Oh, my God, that's enough. I can't take
it. Right,
so you got, you heard it. He went on.
The Pentagon.
He went on to, he omitted the that was the preface of the state president's statement was to say, yeah, we have been arrogant in the past in some regards, and that's what why the world kind of hated us. But now what we're here to do is listen, but you guys have been, there was a big but in that statement, but there is an anti-Americanism that is once casual but can be insidious. And I read you that quote, and that quote was omitted from Sean Hannity's show. Rush Limbaugh, my Honey Bunny's guest fill-in host today, while he's off trying to find some exotic location for us to spend some time. His host, I heard this guy, Mark Stein, on the way in today. He declared that the United States is hanging upside down in the bondage dungeon, being flogged and humiliated by the rest of the planet as a result of the president's trip. And I'm thinking there is some sort of Kool-Aid here that we aren't getting, the rest of the world, because the whole world seems to feel like this was a big success. And you have Sean Hannity saying that it's blame America, it's arrogant, that we're being flogged and humiliated by the rest of the planet. What is this alternative reality that these guys are living on? Even, I'll tell you what, Kevin Sullivan is my guest with me. Now, Kevin was the former assistant to the president, as in President Bush, for communications. Kevin Sullivan has been on the show before. And I know Kevin Sullivan would not go so far as to make outrageous statements quite of this nature. Hi, Kevin. First of all, thanks for being here.
Hey, Nancy. Thanks for having me on. You know, I love being on your show, and I love you. When you said they had solved the global economic meltdown, though, I thought maybe you had gone a little too far and maybe needed to put a cold compress on your forehead or something. But I'm here to be the voice of reason, so I think I have a take on this that can – hopefully strike the right balance.
Okay, well, obviously they cut a deal in 2 days. They were able to figure out...
I think they had some decent language about some of the elements. You know, those communiques that they do are hashed out for you know, 10 days probably in advance of the world leaders ever coming together, and they do haggle over the language, and ultimately the countries basically all agree to it before the leaders even get there. But not to diminish it, I mean, he didn't get the stimulus money necessary. And I think the thing, you know, President Reagan was unpopular in Europe and other parts of the world at times, but he was always viewed as a strong leader, as strength. And I think it's easy to be popular in Europe when you go over there and criticize America.
But what,
so the
you
question
know what?
Is
Here...
now, is he, you know, he's got to, he has to deliver. You know, he went over there for stimulus money from the foreign leaders, didn't really get much of that, a little bit, and went for troops for Afghanistan and didn't get much of that, some trainers here and there. And so he was popular, but did he deliver in a substantive way? I don't think so.
Kevin, hold on, if you will, because I'm going to ask you this question on the other side.
Okay.
Is talk tough effective? I mean, you might feel better about it. Like, yeah, we're America. Blah, blah. How did it fare in the world, except for creating a whole lot more enemies? Or is having a dialogue, which would be with the rest of the world, and saying we're here to be partners, if that's ultimately more effective in terms of not creating more terrorists and solving financial problems and climate change problems, that whole dialogue thing, I'm for that. So we'll see what Kevin Sullivan, who is the former associate director for communications for George Bush, has to say to that. I'm going to let him answer for sure. And hang on the line. I know that there's some people that agree with Kevin and others. It's 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Show.
You believe me when I say this love will never fade away. Oh, because walking on the street to the bright light.
Right side of the globe, perhaps, is a better way to say it. On the eve of our actually post-historic trip by President Obama to London for a G20 and NATO summit, where the world received him warmly with a huge sigh of relief that at last they have a president with which they can deal and talk in a dialogue, in a bilateral fashion, multilateral discussion. And Sean Hannity, other folks are... off the rocker, actually, saying that the president was blaming America, calling us arrogant, even though they omitted, at least Sean Hannity did on his show, omitted the statement that President Obama said about the anti-Americanism that exists in Europe. And Kevin Sullivan is with me. He is the former communications assistant to President George W. Bush. Kevin, before the break, I said I was going to ask you about the two different styles of these presidents and their level of dialogue with our allies, and which was more effective. Because whatever you say, you don't like what President Obama said or how he said it, he actually said, so I've come to Europe to renew our partnership. We'll listen and learn from our friends and allies, but where our friends and allies bear their share of burden, together we have to do this.
And I think that was fine. What I think the test now, though, is, Nancy, is he's got the popularity, he's established the dialogue. The reason you have popularity and you engage in dialogue is to, you know, leverage it to get your enemies and your allies alike to do things that are in the interest of the United States, not just to be popular.
What he's doing. But that was the point of it. We want them to send more troops to Afghanistan. We want them to be part of the solution with the where we have offshore havens where people are hiding their money and that's hurting us. How can we do that if we, you know, how can we establish all these solutions without regaining their respect?
Well, you know, I think, you know, he accomplished some of that, but the results are, we haven't seen the results yet. He went and he had a very, very stylistic, successful trip in terms of what it looked like. I think people were looking for a little tougher talk, though, on North Korea. He punted it basically to the UN, which everybody knew would come out with sort of a toothless, you know, and that's a tricky thing, but
Before we get to North Korea, though, before we get to North Korea, answer, if you will, Kevin, the question about they had an agreement. The G20 came up with stimulus three times, like something like $1.3 trillion in economic stimulus, as well as a whole acceptance of a whole new regulatory scheme for the world, so that you can't manipulate or allow this to happen again in 2 days.
There was some progress on the regulatory front. I think on the dollars, though, like a trillion of it was for the International Monetary Fund, if I'm not mistaken, which is not really what he was going there to get. I mean, that'll be good for developing nations, and it's important, and America's done that for a long time.
It's the vehicle by which you spend those dollars. I mean, the dollars just don't flow to households.
I just don't think he delivered as much, he accomplished as much on the substance front as he did on the, but you know, maybe having a good first trip stylistically, to make everybody over there feel good is a good first step, and we'll see what happens. But the point of the popularity is not to be popular; it's to get those people to do things, you know, that help us, and vice versa.
Let me ask you this question, because I know we're up against the clock here, Kevin. Do you think that this is good politics for Sean Hannity and this guy Mark Stein and others with the pitchforks to be after, or Glenn Beck, who's crying because of the fear of the loss of our country? Do you honestly think for the GOP's future that this is really good politics to act like that this president isn't, you know, working in the best interest of our country?
I didn't hear Mark. I didn't hear Glenn. I heard your Sean clip, and I heard him Friday night. I do agree with Sean that most American people don't want to see their president go to a foreign country and criticize America. And I think, even though, you know, you said he had it in context and he had a, you know, other language before and after it, he did say three critical comments about America in a foreign country. And I think he did it to be to make a point, but also knowing that it would be well received.
I'm out of time.
I think there are other ways.
I'm out of time, Kevin. I appreciate it. I'm smack dab up against the heartbreak. Kevin Sullivan, always good to get your point of view. Your calls are next. 866-991-9927. What do you think? Fair game or not? Talking about President Obama's comments.
You see that story the other day? The White House offered this special on-the-record briefing call for journalists with Hillary Rodham Clinton, the Secretary of State, and they gave the phone number that you're supposed to call in to have you on the record briefing call, and unfortunately they gave the wrong number out. This is true. They gave the wrong number out, and the gentlemen of the press were greeted by this this darkly seductive voice, clearly not Secretary Clinton, offering them phone sex and seeking their credit card if they feel like getting nasty. And, of course, you know, the White House subsequently corrected it and gave out the new number. But what strikes you is that right now it's the rest of the world that is getting nasty. That it would be fine if the White House is going to give out these phone sex numbers, if the White House is in the, like, dominatrix role. But right now, it seems to be the rest of the world getting nasty. And where the...
All right, that is not the cut we're looking at. Forget about that. All right, 866-991-9927. He went on to say that we were being humiliated by these comments, that we should never, the President of the United States should never even address some of the shortcomings of the past. And he's referring to Bush. Frankly, that's what he is. 866-991-9927. And frankly, we needed to apologize for the behavior under the Bush administration, of unilateral behavior that got the rest of the world to hate us. He went on to say in those conversations that he wants this anti-American attitude to end as well, and that these guys got to be able to have a partnership. They have to bear some of the burdens. They have to send more troops to Afghanistan. They have to play a greater role, that America cannot do all of this by ourselves. And it's only... And so I'm asking you the question, in what relationship could you possibly always say you're right and never have a conversation, say, you know, I was wrong about that, but here's what you need to do? What's different than a personal relationship with a world relationship? You can't say we're always right and they're always wrong and expect that relationship to be functional. It doesn't work that way. Raul in Hollywood.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, you're on with Nancy Skinner. Thanks for holding on, Raul.
You know, ma'am, you know what I found so offensive of what the president said is where he said it. He said it in France. You know, France has a lot of grievances with us, and they treat us with disrespect when we go and visit their country. And, you know, the comment that Sean did not air, the one where he says, I have any quotes here, in Europe there is an anti-Americanism that is at once casual but can also be insidious. You know, the president is being hypocritical because he's the anti-American. That's why they love him in France so much, Nancy.
President Obama is anti-American?
Oh, Nancy?
Because he said it in France.
No, ma'am, because he's been cavorting with a former unrepentant terrorist. What Sean said is true. He's attending a church for 20 years with an anti-American pastor. You know, he went to Europe during the campaign, and he also made some comments back then. Remember when he went around mid-June after he was nominated? He went over there, and they greeted him, you know, rolled out the red carpet, and then he found out again against America. You know, this is what I find detestable.
What did he say?
You know, I don't have the quotes in front of me.
If
you look it up, you'll find that he did make some comments when he went to Europe.
He said nothing different than he said as president, which is that, you know, the last president, Raul.
Well,
let me finish.
Okay.
The last president was, you must know, was the rest of the world despised President Bush because of this. His tough talk, his cowboy talk, we're always right. So we essentially, that sort of attitude, it affects us in a couple of levels. Actually, a few levels. It affects us in terms of the world recruiting in the war on terror. That anti-American hatred brings more terrorists in that we then have to go fight and kill. And it did nothing. He didn't capture bin Laden. So, great. So he essentially recruited more terrorists into the fold, but didn't do anything. He didn't get the guy who attacked us on 9/11. We got no help from the rest of the world community on wars that they should have helped us with, like Afghanistan, where we were all united in that war, but they all took off. And now this president is trying to get them just to share the burdens in this world. And that's all he's doing. You see that? The idea that you call him anti-American is ridiculous, and I have to say, Raul, if you really believe that, then you're a bit unhinged. If you think this guy does not love his country, you don't think that the president loves his country.
Nancy, I'm still here.
Yeah, you're on.
Oh, good. Okay. I thought you hung up on me.
No, man, I don't do that.
When you attend a church like that, and then he's disingenuous enough to say, I didn't know he talked like that. Come on, ma'am. You know,
You're talking about Reverend Wright, okay?
Yeah.
Because the pastor of his church,
And then the former Republican
said something stupid. Now listen, Raul, I've been to that church. I've debated President Obama in his own church, okay? Trinity. And so I've met Reverend Wright. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I've heard what he has to say on that.
They pulled out some very terrible comments during that campaign that the president explained quite clearly that this was not the guy he knew, that he did not hear the comments. And then when he did hear them, he said, I forget the word he used.
Well, he distanced himself. Then he finally, got rid of him. He just got him out of his life. But first he was kind of playing ball. And he said, I didn't know.
So how does that make President Obama anti-American?
Because he's going to the church. I mean, you have to understand.
He no longer goes to that church.
I'm sorry?
He no longer goes to that church.
No, but he was going there for a long time, man. That's what I'm saying.
So if you somehow know somebody by 3 degrees or 6 degrees of separation, whatever it is, who does something wrong. So if you know a criminal, Raul, somehow if your brother-in-law was a criminal, or you knew a guy, you went to his party store and he was a criminal, and you go bought chips and donuts from that store, are you a criminal?
Man, if you're in politics like he is, this is what I'm saying. You're not going to be associating with people like this.
All right. You cannot know or account for every statement that every person who has made, Raul. I'm sorry. We're just spinning around and around and around. If that's all if that is the substance of all you can say is that he's anti-American because he went to a church where Reverend Wright said something anti-American, then, he explained it. He disavowed whatever the word is. I forget. I think in very strong terms, removed himself from those comments. And the fact is, he needed to say what he said overseas. He needed to go over there and say this. Because it's true. We cannot bear the burden of all of the challenges that we have to put up with in this world. And unlike President Bush, he's going to make the case that we need to. And that includes making peace with Islam, which is what he's doing today. Because if you went over there, I've seen lots of polls that relate to attitude toward America, and especially in the Middle East, if you don't want to send Raul your son and daughter to go fight in another war with Islam because you're pounding your chest about how great America is and so many anti-Islamic statements. Trust me, we have Dearborn, Michigan in our backyard, which is the second largest Muslim population in the world in this city of Detroit. So I went through that as well. And the attitude that those folks conveyed, they were left with quite clearly, was not just we're against the terrorists. It was, we were against the whole religion of Islam. That is how the actions and attitudes were portrayed by the last administration. And so this is called some wound healing that is being done on this trip. President Obama had to do this. He said he went there to listen and be more humble. And I think there's going to be a great payback as a result of doing that. I do. I think the rest of the world is going to they're going to be forced to really get back in the game. Because I think in a way it's been an excuse, a lot of this. It gave them a convenient excuse to make us deal with all the problems. And so now they don't have that excuse. We aren't that formerly arrogant nation. We're partners. Partnership. Relationships. And I would like, Raul, for you to tell me what relationship works, where you just always say, I am always right and you are always wrong. Tell me how that works out for you. Or your girlfriend, wife, mother-in-law, anyone. How that would work out for you. Instead of, let's talk. Let's talk amongst ourselves. That seems to work a little bit better. 866-991-9927. The number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Shocking. Look at this Pew Research Center poll. partisan gap in Obama job approval, widest in modern era, 61% partisan gap. 88% of Democrats approving of his job, and relatively low approval ratings among Republicans. What's interesting about this poll is that it says that of all the differences, that there's substantially more criticism of this Democratic president than in the past. Imagine that. Sean Hannity and all these right-wingers criticizing President Obama. Shocking, is it not? Could we call that anti-American, to say that he's discrediting our country by discrediting the president? It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. Jesse is in Whittier, California. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to comment on what Raul had said. Just because President Obama has a relationship with the Reverend Wright, that makes him anti-American. Well, if that's the case, then, well, since ex-President Bush was related with the Bin Ladens, does that mean that it was an inside job, 9/11?
Well, he wasn't. Yes, he did. There was, to the Bin Laden family, there was a relationship with the construction company, not necessarily Osama Bin Laden. But your point is well taken, Jesse, that some relationship at some level, and that was a financial relationship with that family and the rest of the family, whether you say that they had nothing to do or that they had disowned Osama bin Laden or not. You're right. The better line, I think, would have been, Jesse, I wish I would have thought of it when he was on the line. The better line would have been, Dick Cheney was working for Halliburton at a time that there was a ban on selling anything to Iran, and there was a subsidiary that was created to sell goods to Iran. So wouldn't you say that's kind of anti-American if you go around U.S. laws to sell goods to our mortal enemy where there's an international sanction and you do that? That kind of seems like would be anti-American.
Yeah, really. Also, I just have to say one more thing about Sean Hannity. I used to listen to him, and, you know, he promised his audience that they were going to find the weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting.
Well, don't hold your breath, Jesse.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Nancy.
Appreciate your call. All right, let's move on to Chris. Chris is in Orange County, California. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. I'm so pleased to talk to you.
Well, thanks for calling in.
I think you are just spot on with what you are saying. I found it interesting with some of these, like Hannity and the caller, and berating Barack Obama over his conversation. From my perspective as a Christian, he was doing exactly what Christians are supposed to do. You're supposed to admit your faults and try and develop relationships with people that are positive and caring. And that goes from the small scale to the macro level of country.
Where have I heard that before, Chris? Let's see. Say Jesus?
Yes. And I thought he is insulting someone who's doing exactly what a good Christian is supposed to do. And, you know, I think we come from those roots in this country, Judeo-Christian roots, where you're supposed to work with other people. You're supposed to try to do your best.
Kind of like, where have I heard that? Like, do unto others. Something about golden something or other. Oh, yeah, the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them. Right. So not just to yell at people and say, we're always right. You're always wrong. Yeah, I forgot that part in my 12 years of Catholic education. Well, Chris, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot. That's kind of what I was going at. I mean, that's how you heal relationships. Oops. Oh, Patricia, I'm sorry. I just cut you off. My bad. Call back 866-991-9927. Hit the wrong button. Yeah, it's called healing relationships. So when you get in a fight with somebody, you know, and there's tension, what do? You say, or you go to, don't you watch In Treatment on HBO? First thing you say is, this is how I feel, and this is how I feel. You don't say, you did this, you did that, but no. And I think this was a good first step for the president to go over there and acknowledge that we haven't always been the most open of nations, especially of the last 8 years, taking a lot of unilateral action that has offended the rest of the world. Yep. And there had to be some healing done, frankly, is what had to happen. We had to heal those relationships. I mean, he's talked about healing those relationships, international relationships, so they don't come back to haunt us. And it's especially with the Muslim world, I would much prefer our president to go say we are and have never been at war with Islam, the religion, so that you, what you do is you just don't want to feed the beast. You don't want to continue to pound your chest for your own self-serving political gain. Meanwhile, building up the hatred, it's the recruitment corps is essentially what it is. And them's fighting words is what happened for the last 8 years. Patricia, I'm sorry I cut you off. That was my bad.
That's
okay. I went to pull you up and I cut you off. How are you?
Hi there. Good. Thanks, Nancy. Nancy, you know, yeah, going back to that last caller, I think one of the points we want to point out is if you look at the founders of this country, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, they always talked about if you criticize your government, that means you love your country because you want your country to be the best it can be.
Ah,
and when your country does wrong, you admit it. You know, what we did in Iraq was pure arrogance, you know. Remember Bush's idea of you're either with us or you're against us.
That worked out really well, didn't it? Yeah.
You know, so if I don't agree with my president, that makes me a bad person or it makes me anti-American.
Well, they're always pulling that anti-American card out. And you're right. I wish I would have thought of that when I was on the phone with Marvel. Our founding fathers said that. That is the key to making sure that our country is strong. When we are able to criticize it, then you will not have tyranny. Right?
Absolutely.
So, gosh, where were you people when I needed you? With Raul?
Oh, you're wonderful, Nancy. Don't worry about it.
Thanks, Patricia. I appreciate that. And on that note, it is going to be a good night here for us in Detroit, as all eyes are on the NCAA and the basketball championship. What's that, John? John's all excited because he's going to the game. So I'll be watching the game. All right, go Spartans. Even if the president's on the other side, this is probably one of the few areas I've ever disagreed with him. He's Tar Heels. I'm Spartan. So, I'm against him. He's for him. I'm against him. We have a divide between us, finally. I knew I'd find one. I have one other one I haven't shared with you. I'll share it with you sometime. And I'll be back tomorrow, win or lose, on the Nancy Skinner Show.